If you believe in an America where millions of Americans believe in an America that's the America millions of Americans believe in, you're going to love today's program. If you like talking about bayonets and horses and binders full of women, you're going to love today's show. I'm Jabalani LaFall, and on today's Central Standard, we talk about the place of political humor in our local, regional, and national discourse with University of Missouri political scientist William Horner and improv comedian Adam Hochler. We'd also like to hear some of your favorite political jokes and quotes. And we know that politics stir a lot of passion, so we ask that if you can't be civil today, at least you can be funny. Lots of laughs coming up on Central Standard after this hour's NPR News. Good morning, Kansas City. FunnyOrDie.com co-founder Adam McKay said the idea of deregulating Wall Street after the financial collapse is as crazy as a guy in a hospital gown by the side of the highway waving Barbie dolls at passing cars. Both comedians and politicians say the darndest things, and most of the time, these things are funny to the rest of us and built-in fodder for laughter. This is Central Standard. I'm Jabalani LaFall. Today we discuss the whimsical opinion and commentary of the political persuasion and just flat-out funny jokes about our political process and politicians in the wake of election season. And joining us now to talk about the role of political humor in our national discourse is University of Missouri political scientist William Horner and comedian Adam Hochler.
Hey, what's up?
The KC Improv Company. That was comedian Adam Hochler, by the way.
Hello there. Yeah.
Welcome to the show, Messrs. Horner and Hochler. Hochler.
Yeah, it's Horner, a German last name, man.
Horner and Hochler. It's an alliterative thing. Welcome to the show. What do you find funny,
thank you,
Adam Hochler, about today's coverage or today's outcome or political climate as we look back on the very recent election?
Well, I think one of the main things is that it was so forced on us this time around, you know? So many people constantly had that in your face. It was always there. So you had to make a joke about it. You had to laugh at the ridiculousness that was being put out there by both sides at different times, you know? I personally am a more liberal person, so I found a lot of what the conservatives were saying egregious. And instead of getting up in arms and angry about it, I just decided to go ahead and make fun of it.
A lot of built-in jokes today about Broncos, boulders, and Mile High, given what's been happening in Colorado.
Absolutely.
Professor Horner, what made you want to focus on political humor as an area of political science? You've been doing it for almost the past half decade now.
That's true. I think that, you know, this is something that I think that a lot of people relate to that maybe don't necessarily relate to, you know, nuts and bolts talk about politics. And so things that make people laugh are things that they pay attention to. And I think that's important for us who study politics to pay attention to as well, because it's what, you know, it's the way a lot of people engage in the process.
Professor Horner, have you spotted any immediate outcome of this election or any immediate impetus for laughter from what we've seen with this election coverage or any referendums?
Well, Are you asking me what made me laugh?
Yeah, what made you laugh about last night?
Well, about last night, I thought that I have to tell you, I thought that the Comedy Central did just a brilliant job of parodying the things that were going on the cable news networks. You know, the grand show that was being put on CNN and Fox with the sweeping camera movements and the dramatic walking around the set and boy, they captured that just brilliantly, I thought, on The Daily Show and The Colbert Report and throughout the night online as well.
Yeah, the touchscreens and the iPads and walking through the halls slowly so they can burn up time, that's kind of irresistible.
Oh, absolutely.
It is.
Professor Horner, political cartoons have been around since powdered wigs and long stockings on white men. But when did we start to see comedy becoming a part of the actual political discourse? When do we start to see comedy becoming mainstream in political discourse?
Well, I mean,
mainstream. That's
mainstream. Well, you know, I think I focus mostly on the television age, but you saw some political comedy even in the radio age. You see political comedy in the theatrical age. I mean, politics has always been the subject for entertainment, whether we're talking about comedy or drama. You know, as long as the history of people making this kind of stuff, politics has been a major area of subject matter. So, you know, political cartoons are one particular area, but in popular culture, politics have always had a role to play, I would argue.
I guess retooling that question, you see, you mentioned The Daily Show, you mentioned The Colbert Report, and the prominence of these faux news shows where a lot of people are actually getting their actual information as well as laughs. How has that changed the political landscape?
Well, that has been an interesting evolution. You know, there are a lot of very fun, you know, interesting academic studies that have been done on the effect that the Colbert Report and the Daily Show have, particularly on their demographic. You know, they draw a younger group of people that watch those shows most frequently, and there are some very interesting findings. The people who watch those shows, they're then intrigued enough or interested enough by what they see made fun of to go and seek out more information about. And so those shows have very highly informed political, you know, highly informed audiences. And so that's been interesting, and that's a relatively new phenomenon, I would say.
Adam Holscher, what's the point of political jokes? What makes them so tantalizing to tackle?
Well, I think, as I said a little bit earlier, I think because they're so in your face, you have no choice but to pay attention to politics now. It's on every single if you're a fan of comedy, if you're a fan of watching Comedy Central, you're going to be watching Colbert Report, you're going to be watching Daily Show, and you're going to get hit. You're going to be watching Key and Peele as well. And those things in SNL, and those things are going to hit you in the face with politics all the time. So you have to make fun of it. And as a comic, you have to be with the times, and currently we're in a very, very polarized situation, and you've got to make fun of it. You've got to laugh at what is ridiculous and people talking about ridiculous things on air, you know, whenever you go into people talking the 47% situation and everything like that. You're having a candidate making fun of half of the country. If you don't make fun of that candidate back, then you're doing yourself a disservice.
Slightly less than half of the country numerically.
Slightly, yes. Very slightly less than half of the country.
Why do we use political jokes, Professor Horner? What is the end game there?
Why do we? Well, I think that joking about things gives us a sort of safety valve. I think that making jokes about things can take some of the tension out of situations. I mean, if you're the butt of the joke, perhaps not. But I think that humor is a way for us to maybe try and get along a little bit, and it is a safety valve. You know, I've interviewed some of the folks that produce Saturday Night Live, and that's exactly how they view themselves. They see themselves as sort of a pressure valve that making fun of politics lets people maybe decompress a little bit and take a different perspective on things. And I think political humor does that generally.
Talk about this year's supply of comical material in this election year of 2012. What did this year's supply bring us, Professor Horner? And then we'll go to Adam Holscher.
Sure. Well, you know, that may depend in part on your ideological perspective, I suppose. I think it was a slimmer pickings this year than we've had in presidential campaigns past. I think that the candidates didn't provide quite as much material as they have in the past. It depends. We're talking about different kinds of humor outlets too, right? Comparing Saturday Night Live and The Daily Show, for example, they're very different entities. So The Daily Show is always going to have material because they're commenting on things that happen on a day-by-day basis. SNL is more impression-driven, and I think on the SNL front, there just wasn't as much material for them to work with this time around as they had, especially in 08 and as they've had in previous election years.
What do you think, Adam Holscher?
Well, I think that first of all, the robotic nature of Mitt Romney was huge this year. Just the fact that he refused to ever humanize himself until he lost last night. The most humanizing thing he had done the entire time was talk about a story where he tied his dog to the top of his car. And he was like, ha ha, don't we humans do silly things? That was probably the most interesting part of the Romney character. And for Obama, him going out there and singing Al Green in front of his constituency and things like that, that added a whole nother level to the Obama character that's already out there, the caricature of him, which is this super smooth, and some would say, because if you read his past books, how much he enjoyed marijuana, you kind of get into that whole feeling of, you know, the super smooth, pot-smoking, you know, kind of best friend guy that you sit on a couch with and light up a bowl. That's kind of the character that he is portrayed at different times. And on Key and Peele, they kind of fell into that, the high school years of Barack Obama, which they've been doing as a sketch. I think that has been a big part of this year's political commentary, this year's political comedy.
Kind of makes Colorado an up-in-the-air state.
Oh, man, absolutely. I think they're going to move the White House there, and I think all of the entirety of the liberal nation is going to move there instantly.
You're listening to Central Standard on 89.3 FM KCUR, streaming live on KCUR.org. I'm Jabalani LaFall. We're talking about the role of political humor in our national discourse, and we have University of Missouri political scientist William Horner joining us from NPR member station in Columbia, KBIA, and improv comedian Adam Holscher is our in-studio guest from the KC Improv Company. You can also check out a list of funny political jokes from over the years at KCUR.org. And with that, Kansas City, what is your favorite political joke? Call us up at 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. At Twitter, we are at KCURCST, and Facebook is also an option. And we're asking you to complete this joke. A conservative, a liberal, and a moderate walk into a bar. And we ask, if you can't keep it as civil as we would like, at least be funny. My personal contribution to that is a conservative, a liberal, and a moderate walk into a bar. They all become lawyers and lobbyists. Bar.
I get it.
Bar.
I get it. Yeah, they pass the bar, in fact.
Bar.
Hmm.
Bar. We were talking about The Daily Show. What should the structure of a political joke look and feel like, Adam Holscher?
Political jokes should usually find something that was honest that the candidate said or one of the pundits said, and then you should find out if this is true, what else is true? If Mitt Romney tied his dog to the top of his car, what other crazy things has this rich person done? Like, what other crazy, ridiculous things does he think makes him human? You know, it should be that concept of, if you see something that seems ridiculous that they've said or that they've done, you find the other ways that you could take that. Has he ever tied his Olympic show horse to the top of a van? Different things like that.
Does he believe in an America that believes in an America that millions of Americans believe in?
Exactly.
Stuff like that.
Exactly.
Professor, what is the structure of a political joke? And how should it look to make it effective?
Well, I think that a good political joke plays off of something, you know, some kernel of reality. And so, you know, if you're talking about an impression on Saturday Night Live, they'll take some aspect of that person and they will so magnify it and make it, you know, almost a defining characteristic of that person. And that becomes what a lot of people who don't, you know, maybe pay attention to regular mainstream politics, that becomes what they remember about the person, whether it's George Bush saying a lot of funny words and waving his hands around, George Herbert Walker Bush saying a lot of funny words and waving his hands around, or maybe the impression that George W. Bush is not very bright, or Gerald Ford falling down, you know, all the time and not being very bright. You know, for that kind of thing, and for jokes on other, you know, different style shows like The Daily Show, it is finding something, you know, taking some part of reality and then making it, you know, pursuing the ridiculous nature of that. And they do that really well on The Daily Show because they've got correspondents who take, you know, say and do the most outrageous, ridiculous things. And you've got a great straight man in Jon Stewart sitting there to try and you know, be the ringleader or the ringmaster of that circus, and it works out really well.
And they are essentially a troupe of improv comedians as well, so that sort of works out as well. Speaking of The Daily Show, we're about to go to a clip from The Daily Show that compared Barack Obama and Mitt Romney's approach to a speech in front of a predominantly Latino audience and the whimsical analysis that ensues. Let's check that out.
It's why Mitt Romney faced a bit of a challenge when he and President Barack Obama both spoke last week at the National Association of Latino Elected and Appointed Officials, NALEO, as we found out in another installment of our Latin Grammy award-winning series, The Panderers, or Los Panderos. Yes. Yes. Now, the greeting at these events is everything. You never get a second chance to make a first impression. First up, Mitt Romney.
I come to you as a candidate for the president of the United States of America.
Ooh. Not so sure that was a plea for unity as much as a guy addressing a room where he's not sure everybody speaks English. Are you comfortable? Your chair-o. Chair-o. All right, let's see Obama's open.
It is good to be back at Naleo. Qué placer estar aquí con tantos amigos.
Now I know why the economy isn't doing so well. You spent the past 3 years doing Rosetta Stone tapes.
El partido de fútbol del mundo con tanta prisa. Goal.
First round goes to Obama. Next up, connection to and comfort with the community. Mr. President.
I want to thank Secretary Solis for the introduction and for her hard work. She is one of the best labor secretaries we have ever had, and she is thinking about you each and every day.
Wow. Some of my best secretaries of labor are Latino. Well done, Romney.
Throughout my campaign, I've often had the chance to speak about my dad and how proud I am of him. He was born, as Gotti said, to parents, American parents, living in Mexico.
Ding, 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 ding. My dad is Mexican-ish.
That was a clip from The Daily Show poking fun at a contrast between Obama and Romney's approach to speeches to a predominantly Latino audience. We're talking about the role of political humor in our national discourse here on Central Standard today in the wake of the election. University of Missouri political scientist William Horner and improv comedian Adam Holscher are our guests today. And you are our guest out there in Radio Land. What's your favorite political joke, Kansas City? Call us up at 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. You can also hit us up on Twitter at KCURCST and Facebook, where we are asking you to complete the following joke. A conservative, a liberal, and a moderate walk into a bar. And here's some of those completions. Tim finished our joke on Facebook. A conservative, a liberal, and a moderate walk into a bar. The bartender pours in the drinks. The conservative complains that the bartender overcharged. The liberal complains that the bartender didn't pour enough. And the moderate points out that they're both right and ends up driving them all home. I like that. Very whimsical. John supplied this punchline to our joke. A conservative, a liberal, and a moderate walk into a bar. The bartender says, "What do you have, Mitt?" That is pretty funny, considering he does not drink.
Oh, it's true. That's true.
Adam, as a comedian, how do you choose whether you're going to tell a joke about the issue or a joke about the person or what the person said about the issue? How do you choose where to go?
Whatever is the most ridiculous part of their character, that's where you go after. If they said something that is ridiculous, you go after that. If they themselves are ridiculous, you go after that. Mitt Romney, a perfect example of this, and I keep going back to him because he gave me so much this year. But Mitt Romney's character was very interesting because he is incredibly wealthy, had never spent a day of his life not wealthy, and he didn't understand the plight of the average person, or anything that the average person had to go through. It's that concept of, do they know what a gallon of milk costs? You know, and the answer to that is no, I don't think he does. He knows probably what the price of milk on the stock market is or how much it's going for and that, but he doesn't know how much it costs in a store. So you go after the thing that makes them the most interesting to parody and to lampoon.
And Professor Horner, getting all poli-sci-ish with it, is most political humor about the issue, or is it mostly, to coin a political science phrase I myself learned in a political science class at Mizzou, ad hominem fallacy? Is it mostly ad hominem attacks?
From a comedic
perspective?
Yeah, no, I mean, it depends on the outlet, I suppose, and who you're, you know, who's telling the jokes, and what the motivation of the people telling the jokes is. You know, I think with shows like The Daily Show, I think they have a fairly clear political agenda, right? And so, you know, the jokes there tend to be a little bit harder edged when they're talking about Republicans than when they're talking about Democrats. And so You know, I think there is something to that. I think if you look at a show like Saturday Night Live, they will tell you when you talk to them, the people that produce the show, that they don't have a political agenda. You may or may not believe that, but when you pursue that with them and ask them, you know, where they're coming from, they say they just go for what they think is funny and what they think people are going to laugh at, because ultimately they're aware of the division of the nation and how evenly divided the population is at the moment, and so they go for what's funny and they don't worry so much about. You know, trying to push a political point that you might see in other shows.
We're on with William Horner, a political scientist from the University of Missouri, and an improv comedian, Adam Holscher of the KC Improv Company, talking about the role of political humor in our local, national, regional, and frankly, international discourse here on Central Standard today. Cynthia in Prairie Village, welcome to Central Standard.
Yes, I do have one joke for you guys.
Okay.
Okay, here's the modern red newspaper headlines. Obama walks on water. The conservative headlines, Obama can't swim.
Wow. Wow. Thank you very much, Cynthia.
No, but one other thing I want to say that with this past round of elections, it looked like the conservative voice was reflected in Fox News, a conservative radio show host. But I'm thinking, where was the moderate voice heard in outlets? There isn't a dedicated media outlet for that except for comedians.
True.
Don't you think that's kind of unusual?
Go ahead and take that question, Professor Horner. Moderation isn't very sexy, is it?
Well,
from an ideological perspective.
Well, it's not. That's true. You're absolutely right. And it's not the moderates, I suppose, are were the undecided voters that they were all going for in this election. But moderation doesn't make for great jokes, and it's the extreme things that are the fodder for jokes, and the extreme things that people say, and the extreme characteristics that people have that make for good jokes. So, you know, moderation. But I wouldn't say comedians were the voice for the moderates necessarily. I think that most of the humor, has more. I wouldn't define as moderate.
We've been asking our listeners to complete this joke: a conservative, a liberal, and a moderate walk into a bar. Corey completes it this way: a conservative and a liberal and a moderate walk into a bar and just drink together because they have nothing else in common. That's the response to that joke. And we're going to go to Nancy in Lawrence. Nancy, welcome to Central Standard.
Good morning. I think jokes can sometimes really be real poignant about where we are today, just in the commentary on where we are. And there was a joke in 2008, really before the election in 2008, and it was that no matter who won, Obama or McCain, either one of them was going to demand a recount. And I use that quite a bit to say, you know, this is our economy is really, really, really in trouble. And I think it was a great way of politely saying, for the last 4 years, that Obama has really been really up against the wall with this economy, and you could do it with humor.
Thank you very much, Nancy, for your contribution to the conversation on the role of political humor in our national discourse. Who's your go-to politician over the years for comedic material, Adam? Do you have a go-to politician?
Oh, yeah. Well, of course. I think that any comic that doesn't say George W. Bush was the best thing to happen to comedy is lying. he was fantastic. He did our job for us pretty much. You'll go back and you watch old SNL sketches. And I say old SNL sketches just a few years ago. And they wouldn't change words. They would specifically do almost entire speeches as George W. Bush that he actually did. They wouldn't change anything. They might change the surroundings that he was in or might change a couple of things that happened during the speech. But he would just – they would go on – Will Ferrell would go on and just say exactly what George W. Bush actually said, and the audience would have rip-roaring laughter because it was ridiculous. It was over the top. Same thing with Sarah Palin. When the Sarah Palin sketch went up and Tina Fey did the Sarah Palin sketch the first time, she did a word-for-word speech that Sarah Palin had given. I believe actually it was the Katie Couric thing. She had did a word-for-word interview with Katie Couric, and the audience ripped up laughing. It wasn't because she changed something or made it funny. It was because she just shined a light in a different avenue of, hey, wasn't this ridiculous?
Swinging that question over to political scientist William Horner, why are conservatives such an easy target for these jokes?
That's a loaded question you're asking.
It is. click, click, boom.
Yeah. Well, I wouldn't agree with that, actually.
You wouldn't?
I mean, no. I mean, I don't think there's anything inherently. I think that I would guess, and you know, I always tell my students that I'm not going to discuss my personal politics with them, and I don't have that hang up with you here. I mean, I would say I'm more liberal than conservative for sure, but I also think that a lot of the people that produce the material have a liberal bent, so I think there's a natural inclination to go after conservatives. I don't know that it's necessarily true that conservatives make the best jokes. Bill Clinton was the fount of an awful lot of good jokes when he was president as well.
That's true.
He sure was. We're talking about the role of political humor in our national discourse. We have University of Missouri political scientist William Horner and improv comedian Adam Hosher of the KC Improv Company. We're going to take a quick break. When we return, more laughs will unfurl from this verbal comedic political pinball machine. I got nothing. Kansas City, what have you got? What do you find funny about the political process? Call us up at 816-235-2888. You can also hit us up at Twitter at KCURCST and Facebook, where we're looking for the punchline of a joke, a conservative, a liberal, and a moderate walk into the bar. Extra points if you can keep it civil and funny. We'll be right back. And welcome back to Central Standard. I'm Jabalani LaFall. The great Will Rogers once quipped that everything is changing. He said, everything is changing. People are taking their comedians seriously and politicians as a joke. We're talking about the role of political humor in our national discourse. And our guests are University of Missouri political scientist William Horner and improv comedian Adam Hosher of the KC Improv Company. Our joke of the day that we're asking you to complete is a conservative, a liberal, and a moderate walk into a bar. Austin tweets this punchline at KCURCST, a conservative, a liberal, and a moderate walk into a bar. And wait a minute, you're telling me they agreed on one thing? That was the response there. Kansas City, what is your favorite political joke? Can you complete that joke, a conservative, a liberal, and a moderate walk into a bar? Call us up at 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. 88. You can also hit us up on Twitter at KCURCST, as Austin just did, and that question has also been posted on Facebook. Larry emailed this joke yesterday morning. Mitt Romney told his wife Ann to buy a beautiful negligee. He said, tonight you're going to sleep with the next president of the United States. After Romney conceded, Ann looked at him and said, Mitt, I'm confused. Is Barack coming over here, or am I going over there? Wow. Zing, 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 zing. What do we get from political jokes, Professor Horner? How does that enhance our national discourse or political literacy, for that matter?
Well, I do think that it is. I think anything coming from the perspective of somebody who wishes that more people were interested in politics and more people got out and voted and those sorts of things, I think anything that engages people and makes people pay attention to politics is helpful. And I think humor is a way to engage people in politics who might ordinarily not pay much attention. So for me, political humor is important because it gets people to maybe pay attention to something that they weren't paying attention to. Now, the downside of that is if they, you know, they hear the jokes and the response is to just dismiss the politicians as jokes. but my hope is that it acts as sort of a gateway into paying more attention and being more interested in politics generally.
Patrick and Olathe, welcome to Central Standard.
Yes, there was a woman who called in earlier, and her idea was that the comedians are representing the moderates. And one of your guests said he didn't think that was true because moderates aren't, you know, fodder for the jokes and aren't as funny, I guess. They aren't doing as much outlandish things. But when you think about it, I think that's exactly her point, in that the comedians are aiming their jokes at the people on the extremes on both ends, and thus perhaps supporting the moderates.
Thank you very much, Patrick, for a very interesting point. Adam, you wanted to expound on that.
Yeah, I actually very much agree with that. And I don't disagree with the professor either. I think that you can see it in multiple from multiple angles, which is always the way that comedy works. You can see it from multiple angles. You can see it as like you're just ripping on a person because of something silly they said or something silly they did. But you can also take it as that's pointing out that these far right or far left ideas aren't where the country really should be moving, that they should be moving more towards the middle, because you're ripping on those things. You're taking those and shining a light right into the middle of it and saying, hey, look at how silly this is.
Professor Horner, are the targets of these comedic sketches or humorous essays or treatments, are moderates the target? Will only moderates get it?
No, I don't think that's true. And I think maybe I had a different interpretation of what she had. I don't disagree actually with this interpretation of what she said either. I was thinking of moderates as the subject matter or as the fodder for jokes, and you know there's not necessarily a lot there. But as the target for jokes, I understand that comment and I don't necessarily disagree with that. And what was the rest of your question just there?
No, I was just thinking about a moderate guy in like a sweater and some chinos with some coffee who pays all of his bills on time, goes to work on time, loves his wife and children, and is a great citizen. I was thinking how funny something like that would be.
Right.
Right. In opposite town, it would be funny. Dan from Eudora called in to say that the first time he heard Rush Limbaugh, he thought the funniest thing was hearing Rush Limbaugh until his wife told him Rush was actually serious.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Jim in Kansas City, welcome to Central Standard.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I think my favorite one was with Bill and Hillary Clinton. They were on a little walk down memory lane trip through Arkansas one day together, and they stopped at Hope. And as Hillary and Bill were picking up a soda or coffee or something, Hillary looks through the garage and notices that the guy working underneath the car is a man she used to date in high school. So she says, Bill, do you see that man over there? He says, yeah. She says, you know, I used to date him for many years in high school. In fact, I actually stopped dating him, and that's why I started dating you. And Bill looks at her and says, with a rather large head, well, I'm sure you're real happy you quit dating him, because today you're married to the president. And she says, oh, no, if I hadn't quit dating him, I'd still be married to the president.
Very funny. That actually didn't happen, by the way. It's a joke about the Clintons. We're talking about the role of political humor on Central Standard today. And before we get back into the discussion, let's hear from the trailer of the recent comedy The Campaign, starring Will Ferrell and Zach Galifianakis, who run as opposing candidates in a race for a congressional district in North Carolina. Let's check that out.
George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, Abraham Lincoln. What do these men have in common? Marty Huggins has read about these leaders and said, I can do better. He's a visionary.
Let's get rid of daylight savings time, right? Because I hate when it gets dark early.
Why vote for Marty Huggins? He's a small-town dreamer with big-town ideas on how to take Washington by storm.
Washington, D.C. is a mess.
A mess like his opponent, Cam Brady. Another Washington fat cat who only knows one word.
I can't.
I can't.
Can't.
Can't's the real C word.
USA. Isn't it time to give Washington a Huggins?
Get out your vacuums. Your dust mops, your glass plus, your bleaches, your Brasso, Wade air fresheners. Things are a mess. It's a mess.
I'm Marty Huggins, and I approve this message.
Thank you very much.
Vote Marty Huggins. Paid for by Americans United in Unity.
Paid for by Americans United in Unity. That was the trailer from the movie The Campaign, where Will Ferrell plays an incumbent Congressman Cam Brady and Zach Galifianakis plays a challenger, Marty Huggins. We're talking about the role of political humor with political scientist William Horner and improv comedian Adam Holscher. How powerful, Adam, can political humor be?
Oh, it can be some of the most powerful stuff around, actually. Like we were talking about earlier, of it shining light on ridiculousness. We were a perfect example of this is a lot of people knew right away that Sarah Palin was a little off, and we weren't really comfortable with her. A lot of people weren't comfortable with her. But then when SNL started lampooning Sarah Palin and started weekly showing this insanity that was coming out of her mouth, that's when everybody kind of got on the same bandwagon and was like, I can't deal with her. And I think a lot of people moved over to the Obama campaign just because they could not imagine a person like Sarah Palin being next in line for the presidency in case something would have happened to John McCain. I think that political humor has not only there but in other times actually affected the elections.
Denver G tweeted in to our joke of the day, a conservative, a liberal, and a moderate walk into a bar. He tweets, I'm sorry, I'm telling it wrong. A conservative, a liberal, and a moderate are behind bars. That's what he says. That's our joke of the day. And call us up at 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888 to give us the skinny on your favorite political joke. You can also hit us up on Twitter at KCURCST. And the joke of the day that we're asking you to complete, a conservative, a liberal, and a moderate walk into a bar, is on Facebook. And if you can't keep it as civil as we would like, at least be funny. How is political humor powerful, Professor William Horner of the University of Missouri?
Well, I think political humor can be powerful. I think that it can make a real impact in people's perceptions of politicians or perceptions about issues. I would disagree a little bit about the Sarah Palin stuff. I think the Sarah Palin stuff had a profound impact on Sarah Palin's political career. I'm not sure you could argue convincingly it had an impact on the election. There were a couple of moments that election in 08 was close, but it was really never going to be in doubt that Obama was going to win that election. I wouldn't say that Saturday Night Live had a profound impact on swinging people's vote in that impact, but in that election. But it did have a profound impact on how people perceive Sarah Palin. And you know, for a while she played along with the joke, and she appeared on the show. She was rather entertained by the thought of being lampooned by SNL. I think until she realized how things were going and how she was being perceived and the potential impact it was going to have on her going forward. And I think you could easily argue that it has defined her for many people. And you know, she's never going to have a serious chance at a political career again. So I do think it has a profound impact. I think if you want to pick a presidential election that comedy really impacted, and if we stick with SNL, I would argue it was 1976, which was the first SNL, premiered in 75. And so they were deeply involved in the 76 presidential election. I think you can make a real case there for because it was such a close election.
That would be Ford versus Carter.
Ford versus Carter, and had a gigantic audience, which you don't see on any TV show today because there's so many more things for people to watch. Uh-huh. I think you can make a pretty good case that it had an impact on that election.
And Chevy Chase was pretty hilarious in the role of Gerald Ford.
Absolutely.
Well, he was hilarious without doing anything to really appear like Ford, right? I mean, he fell. He was doing sketches where he fell before he ever started saying he was Gerald Ford. I mean, the falling down joke preceded him doing it as Ford. But that's what a lot of people think of when you say Gerald Ford, even people that weren't alive at the time. That's the impression they have of Gerald Ford. So it can be a very powerful thing.
And Will Ferrell, as we remember, even did a whole one-man show as George W. Bush.
Yes, he did, on Broadway, in fact.
Sure did.
Mm-hmm.
Which is all types of irony with that.
Absolutely.
Jay in Leavenworth, welcome to Central Standard.
Hi, how you doing?
Pretty good.
Well, a conservative, a liberal, and a moderate walk into a bar. The conservative puts $2 on the bar and orders whiskey straight. The liberal orders the daily special, which is a bottomless pina colada with a pink umbrella, and he asks the conservative to treat, and the moderate can't make up his mind.
Some people say that would encapsulate the whole fiscal cliff that's coming up, Professor Horner, and other policy issues.
Sure. Yeah.
Some people would distill it down to that. The welfare state of the Democrats, the self-determination of conservatives, and the moderate's inability to do anything but sip coffee and wear chinos.
Yeah, that's very true. And that's going to be fascinating to see how comedians deal with that, right? How are we going to do? Because that's a complicated issue, the fiscal cliff.
And how do you deal with complex subjects that almost nobody really totally understands in full because they deal with a broad mix of – monetary and fiscal policy that aren't very sexy in and of themselves.
Uh-huh. Right. Right. Well, I may defer to the comedic professional, but I would just say that I think what you generally see is that you don't see and again, it depends on the show. I mean, The Daily Show will delve into this kind of stuff, and you'll see, you know, sort of ridiculous takes on maybe narrow angles of it. Saturday Night Live, I would guess, will avoid most of it because I think they don't, you know, I think they find it very complicated to get a good handle on that kind of stuff.
I just think you take a guy named Cliff in a bar and call him Fiscal Cliff.
And you got
sure. And you start there.
You could do that.
Push him off Absolutely. The bar stool and you got it.
Adam, how do you tackle complex subjects as a comedian?
Well, when it comes down to the economy and things like that, I mean, you can tackle it in that way of like, if this is true, what else is true? If we're in this huge debt and we owe all of this money to not only China but to ourselves, you can tackle it with the concept of a person paying themselves back. You know, or the concept that we print a bunch more money and say, well, we've paid all of the money back. Look, see how much money we have? Look, we've got these giant bags with money signs on them. By the way, bread now costs $20.
Yeah. You're listening to Central Standard on 89.3 FM KCUR, streaming live on KCUR.org. I'm Jabalani LaFall. We're talking about the role of political humor in our national discourse with University of Missouri political scientist William Horner and improv comedian Adam Holscher of the KC Improv Company. We're also asking you to complete the joke, a liberal, a conservative, and a moderate walk into a bar. Greg and Waldo contributed this punchline to that joke. The conservative leaves the bar in place. Others can avoid it on their own. The liberal demands that the bar gets lowered so nobody else can get hurt. The moderate checks to make sure the bar is okay. Well, there you go. Adam, Professor Horner, I'm going to ask you to do something challenging here on live radio. Uh-oh. Can you comedically decode or analyze the following quote from Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld for us? He's not necessarily, not even necessarily, he's not an elected official. He's in a cabinet appointee, but had a lot of public attention during the Iraq War and being appointed by Bush. He says, are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
He says, we know there are known knowns. There are things we know. We also know that there are known unknowns. That is to say, we know there are things we know we don't know. But there are also unknown unknowns. The ones we don't know, we don't know. Adam?
Well, he said a variation of no 15 times. And my assumption here is that he was on a game show where if he could work it in more than 10 times, he got another $1,000 for every time he worked it in. That's my assumption.
As a political scientist, Professor Horner, when you see these types of press conferences, the Rumsfeldian quips, the Rumsfeldian ask my own question, answer my own question, esoteric, known, unknown, just Sudoku almost.
Right.
What do you think as a political scientist, and how is this affecting our national discourse and our free press?
Well, you know, that and that specific example, that was a speech where he was being asked that, you know, they were having a little bit of difficulty linking, you know, finding evidence to that the Iraq government was actually, you know, giving aid to terrorist organizations. And so he got into trying to, you know, essentially he's trying to say that just because we don't have the physical proof doesn't mean we don't know what's going on. Right. Oh, I started doing it myself there. You know, it's not a lot different from Bill Clinton saying it matters. It depends on what the word "the" means, right? When he was getting into his testimony during the Monica Lewinsky business. You know, politicians, when they're up on the stage and they're in the moment, and they, you know, sometimes you just get trapped. I think, and you say what comes to mind. And I think politicians have tried to lead us or deceive us forever. And, you know, every once in a while, there's a particularly noteworthy example, and that's one of them.
Uh-huh. We've had a running joke today on Central Standard that we've posed to you, the radio listening audience, a liberal, a moderate, and conservative walk into a bar, or a conservative, liberal, and a moderate walk into a bar, in whatever order you please. And Nick expanded on this previous punchline with a liberal, a moderate, and a conservative walk into a bar. The bartender says, hey, Mitt, what'll it be? Mitt says, nothing. Thank you. How are you and your family? Good. Great. Great. Listen, I just bought this bar, and I'm going to have to let you go. I've outsourced your job to India. That's a good punchline there. Jay in Leavenworth, welcome to Central Standard. We don't have Jay in Leavenworth. We got Jim in Casey Mo, and a dial tone apparently somewhere out there in Casey Mo as well. Jim, go ahead. Jim is giving us the silent treatment.
Oh, man. Come Jim on, doesn't Jim. Like us at all.
Professor Horner, as the press has gained more access and we seem to have more information than ever about the candidates and the issues, information rather than knowledge or context sometimes, how has that changed the role of political humor?
Well, there's more material out there to work with, I suppose. I mean, the thing about the press, press coverage and humor are separate topics. The press coverage is, the state of press coverage of politics today has gotten to the point where, there's not, that people are using Twitter or Facebook to put out things instantly without doing any fact checking, without doing any, real in-depth. There was a great story in the Washington Post just the other day about how reporters are using it in place of getting access, that they're not bothered that they don't have access to politicians anymore, because now they can just, they can tweet whenever they want to tweet. And so I suppose from a comedic perspective, having all of that stuff out there, if you want to do humor about the coverage of campaigns, or if you just want to pick up on things that get tweeted, it gives you more material to seek out and work for. But I find the state of campaign journalism somewhat troubling, to be honest.
Some people
of
call
of political journalism.
Yeah, some people call it the Uber punditry class. Kind of taken over the political discourse there from a journalistic perspective. Melissa in Overland Park comes in with this to our running joke. A conservative, a liberal, and a moderate walk into a bar. The conservative says, "Bartender, show me your strongest whiskey." The bartender says, "This one here, it's 95% proof." The conservative slams down his fist and walks out. The liberal turns to the moderate and says, "You know, that's the problem with those guys. You show them the proof, and they still don't get it." That's pretty good. Are there any issues, Professor Horner, that have been typically off limits? Issues or public figures that are off limits as far as a comedic approach?
Well, generally, I wouldn't say there's any category of anything that's been off limits. I think sometimes the campaigns or comedians will agree to be hands off. But you think maybe the children of presidents or presidential candidates, but they haven't been off limits. They weren't off limits this time around. Certainly not Mitt Romney's children. Poor Chelsea Clinton came in for some unpleasant jokes on Saturday Night Live when Bill Clinton was president. So I don't think anything is generally or broadly off limits. I think it's situational, but I think just about everything is fair game.
Mm-hmm. Adam, from a comedic perspective, you have the omnipresent too soon. So how do you deal with that?
Oh, absolutely.
In terms of
waffle. Well, first of all, to comment on the professor's statement, I completely agree with you, especially about the kids of presidents or presidential candidates. But if you name your son Tag, it's your fault. That's just true.
They're adults too.
Adults, exactly. So. They can be made fun of because Tag right. said that he wanted to punch the president in the face.
That's,
I mean, like he
right.
he was able to say something like that and
Tag.
Didn't get in trouble for it. Yeah, Tag, you're it. But I think that the omnipresent too soon factor, especially this year in politics, has changed quite a bit because some of the conservative rightists have brought up some really controversial topics this year. We're specifically talking about Todd Akin and a couple of others of his constituents have brought up some really disturbing things. And when they do that, as a comic, it hits you hard, especially whenever you care enough about people. It hits you hard and you're like, hey, I don't know if it's a good idea to start making jokes into this or if it's a point where I'm just going to get really angry. And for me, I was like, well, I have to start making jokes about this guy. And I went into if this is true, what else is true? If he believes this crazy stuff about a woman's body, what else does he believe about science? And I kind of went into to that mode so that I could not focus on the terrible reality of what he spoke about.
What does he believe about science?
Apparently nothing. That's a general thing. Well, first of all, he believes there's a fan inside of a woman's body that does something spectacular.
A microprocessor.
Yeah, a microprocessor, I believe. Yes, and we're all digital units. But no, first of all, he was on a science council. He was on a science council, which is just spectacularly ridiculous about that. Also, he talked about the doctors that had told him this. So you have to get into, like, what doctors was he talking to?
John in Overland Park gave our joke a try, our running joke today, a liberal conservative and a moderate walk into a bar. He says the conservative tells the liberal, you hit the bar because you have too much government overhead. The liberal says the only thing that will make me feel better is to light this joint up. The moderate asks for a libation, conserve the water. That's very thoughtful there. Where do you see political humor going or shifting, Professor Horner, as some people get more disillusioned with not only the political process itself, but also the policy implementation piece of what we vote for our politicians for in the first place? Where do you see comedy shifting in light of some disillusionment?
Yeah, well, I mean, we're going to have to see what happens now that we're past the election and we've got basically the status quo from what we had before the election. We've got the same president, the same majority in the Senate, same majority in the House. So, you know, we're going to see there didn't seem to be a lot of give and take coming from the statements that the Speaker of the House made last night. And so I would imagine that political humor is going to have to focus on that gridlock. You know, I think that there's all kinds of commentary there to be made. And I would anticipate that's where we're going short term anyway.
The punchlines keep on coming in. Augie emails us, a conservative, a liberal, and a moderate walk into a bar. The conservative orders a $4 drink. The moderate orders a $6 drink. And the liberal orders an $8 drink. When the bill came, the liberal suggested that they split it. It made no difference to the moderate, so the vote was 2-1. How do you think of the outcome of this election, which you just mentioned it wasn't much of a change, will change the comedic landscape, if at all?
For me?
For you,
Adam. Yeah, absolutely. I first of all, think that the main thing that's going to come out of this election is that Trump, the big one, is that Trump is going to be the big thing that people go after now because he came out with this billion-dollar revolution thing that he wants to play out, and that's going to be the thing people focus on from this.
You're chomping at the bit for that. We're talking about the role of political humor in our national discourse. In the wake of the elections, we have University of Missouri political scientist William Horner and improv comedian Adam Holscher of the KC Improv Company. Gentlemen, thank you for coming.
Thank you very much.
And thank you, Kansas City. And thank you, Kansas City, for providing us with lots of laughs today. Tune in tomorrow as we examine how censorship on college campuses puts the American debate and free speech in peril. That's not funny. Our show is produced by Danny Alexander. Up to Date is next as the political pundits analyze the 2012 election results. I'm Jabalani LaFall. This is Central Standard. Enjoy your day.